Zalango, this is Kinetic and Taco. What you're about to hear is a Human Rights Radio exclusive presentation that was first aired Saturday, December 29, 2001, at 11:30 p.m., entitled The Human Rights Patrol, Part Number 33, U.S. Terror, Part 2, The Tuskegee Massacre. Your host will be out of the Criminal Enterprise called Springfield, Illinois, war correspondent, commander in the Human Rights Radio Air Force, runaway slave, Kaka Mbana Kentaco. Have a pleasant flight.
Folks are still held hostage, won't ask questions, ruled by fear. See, Uncle Sam does know he owes our folk a big time debt. He knows his lights can't help him. Truth's our weapon, we'll collect. We're talking reparations. That's right, we know we are old. 'Cause for 11 generations in here we were bought in. So see, this crook called Sam did come up when he made our folks his slaves. His posse did the same in Europe, and yes, they too must pay. The lesson, the mind of thyself will help us all move forward. We're taught it will teach us by self to rise to tote the torch. Like those days we were to beat down, yet unhooked from our souls. Seeking truth will turn that around with a human rights patrol.
People's Choice Human Rights Radio, giving praise to our uncreated creator for allowing us to be with you for our 4,575th night of broadcasting in the place to be with we out of the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois. Is war correspondent, commander in the Human Rights Radio Air Force, co-producer of the Human Rights Radio Internet co-creation we call the Human Rights Patrol. Dada, Kanadi, Kentaco, and Zalango to your warrior.
Zalango.
You want to give some shout-outs to the folks that make it possible for folks to hear the Human Rights Patrol coming up out of the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois, around the criminal enterprise called the United States, and around the world?
Yes, I do.
So why don't you do that, then?
First, let's say Zalango to Human Rights Radio 94.3 FM with Kaka Inko Yuhuru and the listeners in the criminal enterprise called Durham, North Carolina, and the listeners in the criminal enterprise called Decatur, Illinois, and 99.9 FM, Human Rights Radio, run by Brother Lavelle. Also to those who listen at 103.3 FM, BVHP, in the criminal enterprise called Bayview, Hunters Point, California, with Kaka Michael Hibbett and the crew. And at 96.3 FM, in the criminal enterprise called Santa Cruz, California, those who listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz with V-Man and their staff. Let us also shout out to the folks who listen to Berkeley Liberation Radio, run by Paul Griffin and the crew. And at this time, let me remind you, wherever you're listening, to thank those who made it possible. And also invite all of you to check us out on the real wide web at www.radio.about.com. Look for the Human Rights Information Network. Click on and hear even more Human Rights Radio.
Now, most of y'all probably don't know this 22-year-old sister here serves as the real true co-producer of this Human Rights Radio Internet co-creation called the Human Rights Patrol. You know, we air it live in the criminal enterprise called Springfield, Illinois, 11:30 Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights. And sometimes the guests that we have from the East Coast have to, you know, we have to tape some of them. And so when we get done, we throw all the dang on different parts out on the table, say, hey, Kanadi, we'll see you at 11:30. You going to have that together for us? And she be on that case. So sisters out there, you know, it's up to y'all to hook us up, you know, hook this stuff up for us. So you see already the example of one young sister and what she's doing. It's on now, ain't it? All right? Tonight we're going to talk about, we'll be black to talk to Kanadi later on as she gets into the area where she's going to control all the levels for the program, get that helicopter out of here so we get some work done. There her go flying off back to the Human Rights Information Center. All right. We're going to talk tonight about, in volume 33 here, about the Tuskegee Massacre. I know y'all call it the Tuskegee Experiment, but you got to comprehend, well, for folks that don't know, long in the light in the early part of the 20th century, 19-something like that, and 30-something like that, this government set out, they said they wanted to find out what effects syphilis would have on people. Now, we bring in this program because you're hearing G.W. Littlebush, y'all present out here screaming about terrorists, and you know, we know what that is. Folks are tired of the Europeans in their land, so they're running them out. And, of course, G.W. Littlebush says them running him out is terrorism, when they really responding to the unrelenting war that these Euro-Asiatics have been waging on the planet. You know what I'm saying? Well, let's talk about U.S. terrorism then. Back in the 30s, they conducted this thing called the Tuskegee Experiment. It was a massacre. And I'm trying to remember. I'm going to get in the stacks and get the absolute, be certain. But I'm pretty sure there's an article you need to read along with to get even more information. It's called The American Journal well, you know, I don't use that 10th letter. The American Journal of Public Health, okay? And it's an article called Public Health Here and Now, November 1st, 1991. I got hooked up to this article by one of my favorite brothers to research with. That was Brother Mawada out of the Criminal Enterprise called Columbus, Ohio. And what they pointed out in there, that it didn't only go on in Tuskegee, Alabama. It went on in six states, okay? And what they did, they selected like 400 black men in each place, and they pumped them full of syphilis. You know, this wicked government, the United States. They pumped them full of syphilis. And then they followed them around and watched them until they died. Man, that's heavy. This program ain't going to bring out what we're going to share with you, something from NBC, you know, 2020. They don't bring out all that other stuff like, you know, the other experiments and that. They generally deal with the one in Alabama, Tuskegee, Alabama, okay? And they deal with this European doctor that was involved. Now, the thing that, there are so many things about this that I could spend 1,000 years talking about, because it is one of the most heartless, heartless ways to treat people you could ever imagine. But let's let 2020 share it with you as we take you to the Human Rights Radio Library. Kanadi's on the board, so she's going to make this stuff work.
Gruesome experiment using human guinea pigs. Not in Nazi Germany, here in the United States.
These men trusted you.
Jay Shadler tracks down the subjects of a 40-year study. More than 400 black men, rural, poor.
They were easily swayed. They're like a pack of sheep, and they could have been talked into anything.
And he finds a director of the experiment who withheld treatment, even as some men died.
Syphilis isn't too bad a disease.
Good evening. Back in the 1940s, when Nazi doctors went on trial for experiments on humans, the world first heard a term called research crime. But most of us, of course, were convinced it could never happen here. Well, tonight, we're going to take you back 60 years to Alabama, where 412 men were singled out for research by the U.S. Public Health Service. At the time, syphilis was raging. Some people could withstand the disease, particularly with treatment, but others died a horrible death. And we'll never know how many from that research group of men could have been saved, as you'll see when Jay Shadler confronts the sole remaining director of the Tuskegee experiment.
Have you ever had even one single moment of moral doubt about what you did?
Moral doubt? Not really.
It began before most of us were born. It was 1932, and the government was on a crusade to stamp out syphilis in the rural South, a disease that caused blindness, madness, and sometimes death.
The days of syphilis are numbered. Syphilis will be the next great plague to go.
Crude chemical treatments were being used with some success. But to better understand the disease, doctors from the Public Health Service wanted to know what would happen if syphilis went untreated. They needed human subjects, and in Macon County, Alabama, they found what they were looking for, a high rate of syphilis and a population that had never been treated. Over the next 40 years, government doctors would make sure 412 of these men never would be. They were the sons and grandsons of slaves, like this man, Charlie Pollard, scratching out a living on a sharecropper's farm.
We have raised cotton all my life, and velvet beans, corn, peas, used to raise a lot of that.
Today, Charlie Pollard is 85, and one of just 27 survivors of the Tuskegee experiment. We met him in the same church where doctors first enlisted him into their study.
Why don't you think there were any white people involved in the experiment?
Well, you know, they're just doing something with colored people.
Did they ever tell you that you had syphilis?
No. No.
What did they tell you?
Bad blood. They said that.
Had you ever seen a doctor before this study began?
No, sir. Not by any means.
Herman Shaw had been told he had bad blood, too. Like the other men who were eventually lured into the experiment, he'd seen the handbills and heard the warnings by the Public Health Service.
Bad blood makes people sick. It destroys heart and brain.
So Herman Shaw came for a free medical checkup at his church, Simmons Chapel. That first exam was complimentary, but a price would be paid later as he was probed, tested, and deceived by an ever-changing corps of government doctors.
They never did tell us what they were treating us for. And on down through the years, somebody leaked out that they were using us for guinea pigs.
They are nice people, but they just weren't educated. That doesn't mean they're dumb. They were just illiterate.
Dr. Sidney Olansky led the Tuskegee study from 1950 to 1955. At 77, he still practices medicine, half days, at his office in Atlanta.
Would this experiment have ever been conducted on a group of affluent white men?
I think it could have been if we'd had white men in the same general carriage. Say, we got a bunch of hillbillies up in West Virginia that had a lot of syphilis.
You do experiments on blacks in Macon County. You talk about hillbillies. It sounds as if you'd like to do just experiments on the most vulnerable parts of the population.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying that because you have to have, in order to do the kind of study we were interested in, you had to have a bunch of people who were close that you could reach and who had syphilis. That was the key.
The other key was to keep the men in the study once they'd been recruited.
And how's your health now, Mr. Johnson?
Pretty fair. I want to call it pretty fair. I have a shortness at the breast.
Price Johnson recalls he was drawn into the experiment by doctors who used a parade of not-so-subtle enticements, from free food and car rides into town to medical care and cash.
We went to VA hospital to give us $25.
That was pretty big money back then.
I know it was. It's good big money.
Mr. Johnson, what was it exactly that they told you they wanted to do with you?
Didn't say. Now, I never questioned nobody about nothing. I just listened. Whatever they say, if I agree, they know it, and if I don't, they don't know it.
The fact that they were illiterate was helpful, too, because they couldn't read the newspapers. If they were not illiterate, as the things moved on, they might have been reading the newspapers and see what was going on.
Frankly, if they had been educated, sophisticated people, they wouldn't have stood for this.
That's right. Except that they got what they wanted. You see, one of the things about the rural black is that the one thing they fear is not to be buried decently.
Not only did the government doctors need these men when they were alive, they needed their bodies after they died for autopsies. But convincing the families to approve this final step in the experiment would not be easy. So another incentive was offered: burial insurance. $50 would cover the cost of a simple coffin, maybe a cemetery plot. Might not seem like much, but for men born and raised in poverty, it was more than enough. When did you pick out your burial plot? When did you do that?
Price Johnson, like nearly all the other men in the study, took the government up on its grim offer.
So this way, if the government was paying for the burial, you wouldn't have to...
They said they would.
They wouldn't have to pass the cost on to your own family.
That's the truth. That's what they said they would do. And I'm pinning on them.
We had an arrangement with the funeral directors that if we got the post, they got the money to bury him.
If you got the postmortem, autopsy.
If we were able to do it. And they took out just some tissue. They were most interested in the heart, the brain, the liver.
Do you know what an autopsy is?
Well, not exactly.
To the government doctors, the men were strictly clinical subjects, conveniently available whenever blood samples needed to be drawn or yearly physicals had to be given.
They looked forward to our coming, really. So we did. We looked them over, and we took some blood. And we had a lot of fun while we were doing it.
I wound up staying in the bed about a week.
After the spinal tap?
That's it.
For the doctors, giving a spinal tap was a way to gauge the progression of the disease. For the men, it was an excruciating ordeal that they were told would help cure their bad blood.
The nurse was in front of me, was hanging on my head. There was one on each side of me.
Holding you?
Yeah. Didn't want me to move. And they give us that spinal shot.
most of the men that we talked to thought that they were actually being treated for their disease when they were getting the spinal taps.
No, that's a diagnostic test. Well, I don't know what they were told. They could have been. I mean, sometimes people will say things that they don't really mean or don't really believe in order to get accomplished something they want.
These men trusted you.
Me? They hardly knew me.
They trusted the government doctors.
Yeah, that may be so.
If nothing was done that was wrong here, morally or scientifically, why don't they trust you anymore?
Someone got them all heated up. They were easily swayed. They were like a pack of sheep. And they could have been talked into anything, I think.
You call them a pack of sheep. You,
well, like
the government doctors used that to their advantage, didn't they?
In a way, yes. Sure. In a way.
Having deceived the men into believing that they were being treated, the government now decided they should be kept from a possible cure. For by the early 1950s, penicillin was widely available. Thousands of syphilitics were given the new miracle drug, but not the men in the Tuskegee experiment.
Come on, Joe.
For them, it was forbidden. Herman Shaw, for instance, had been advised by his local doctor to travel to Birmingham to receive a penicillin shot. But a government nurse tracked him down, saying, "You don't have any business up here."
I said, "Well, thank you." And so they gave me breakfast, put me on the first bus, and sent me back to Towson.
Without any treatment?
They didn't give me anything but supper and breakfast. That's all they gave me.
Once you had penicillin, why wasn't the option given to these men to use it?
Because if we had done that, then all the information we had up to that point would have been negated. That's all.
You basically substituted your judgment for theirs?
My judgment? I didn't start the study. It was part of the job I had when I was put in charge of this lab.
But you were director of the studies for some very crucial years when penicillin was available. So you substituted your judgment, didn't you?
Well, don't you always as a physician?
It's easy for him as a doctor to say what should happen to these men. But if you were to ask him, if he had syphilis, would he have wanted not to be treated?
Tuskegee attorney Fred Gray has sued the government on behalf of the men who survived the experiments and the heirs of those who didn't.
When it comes home, it's a different situation than it is when it's someone else. We can always say what's better for someone else.
The government doctors would never have conceived of doing this experiment on themselves.
I don't know, but I just don't know.
How many doctors do you know who would have put up with this?
No, not many, of course. You know better than that. It's a trick question.
You wonder about a government like that, and you wonder about whether or not this could happen again.
Some people think that it has.
And on the front page of this black newspaper, it says, AIDS, a plot to destroy blacks. Then it talks about the Tuskegee experiment haunts many African Americans.
For the past year, Dr. Stephen Thomas and Sandra Quinn, researchers at the University of Maryland at College Park, have been running AIDS education programs in public housing projects and church basements. In a 5-city survey, they found that the legacy of distrust bred at Tuskegee now clouds the public debate about the origins of AIDS.
Roughly a third, 35%, of the blacks that you polled believe that AIDS is a white plot to eliminate the black race. We're talking about genocide.
That was the question being asked of me when I went into the community. Is AIDS a plot to eliminate the black race?
Though there is no scientific evidence to support that notion, the fears persist.
It is the issue of trust. Why should I trust now what you tell me and what the Centers for Disease Control tell me when the Tuskegee experiment took place? And I know that there were people who had syphilis and were not treated.
In 1972, following a flurry of news reports, the Tuskegee study was finally stopped. Congressional testimony by Herman Shaw, among others, led to the first regulations on human medical experimentation and a lawsuit. survivors were awarded $32,000 each, less than $1,000 for every year they were in the study.
There's no way for me to explain the pain that we went through with those different doctors, with no care and no respect for a human being.
How could they have done that?
I don't know, sir. I really don't.
The end result of the experiments, what was learned?
Syphilis isn't too bad a disease.
That was the only thing learned after all of these men were left untreated for all of these years, all of the questions of possible immoral, unethical practices, that's all that was learned?
On the basis of when the study stopped, we didn't learn very much.
True.
We learned that they're nice people back there.
And yet, by Dr. Olinsky's own estimates, of the original 412 men, between 20 and 100 died directly from syphilis. And as we said, no one will ever know whether treatment would have helped.
Now look, this Hannibal Lecter-type creature, that doc cat there, he's still practicing. And I, you know, check out that show Silence of the Lamb, because when they busted old Hannibal Lecter, where'd he go? Where'd he go back to finish working? Amongst African people. He down there in Atlanta, where all the bourgeois Negroes at, and they ain't put him on a... Put his butt on a rail by now. Now, don't forget that article, Public Health, the American Journal of Public Health. Public Health Here and Now is the name of the article. I think it's November 1st, 1991. I'll get into the stacks before too long when we do the next part on this here American U.S. terror. And I'll be sure to get the absolute, you know, even the final, you know, it's got an article name behind Public Health Here and Now. But you see all the players in this whole thing? Your church was in it. So, did you know, brother go to church and the preacher let this clown come in and tell them they got bad blood? How you going to say it? It's not real. And then you got, man, everybody played in it. And they say the black nurse named Eunice Rivers, who tracked that one brother down that you heard about and told him to go back. He ain't had no business trying to get no help. They say she walks the streets. And this is last I heard from Brother No More X out of Columbus, Ohio in 92. He said she walks the streets of Tuskegee, Alabama, saying, children are chasing her. Children are chasing her. There were no children in the study. You know whose children are chasing her? The children that those men would have had she not let them die. That's a wicked move. Remember, that thing went on 40 years, y'all. So I don't know what you need to know about U.S. terror. You know what I'm saying? How you know ain't one going on now? Oh, that article, don't forget, there were six places where they did this at, y'all. And so there were 400 men in five other places in this. And these brothers did not have syphilis. They were given syphilis by the government. All right. You know Columbus got that stuff from sleeping with them sheep on his ship. I know you don't hear that, but that's the real. So they already know what it'll do because they wiped out so many dang on Europeans. You know what I'm saying? All right. That's evil. That's the kind of terror the U.S. need to put out there on the news, right? We got that from NBC. Let us call upon Kanati Kintako because it's time for us to get out of here for this edition of the Human Rights Patrol. Zalango to you again, Warrior.
Zalango.
You want to give a shout out to those stations that make the Human Rights Patrol possible for folks to hear across the criminal enterprise called the United States and around the world.
Right. We want to say Zalango to Human Rights Radio 94.3 FM with Kaka Inko Yuhuru and the listeners in the criminal enterprise called Durham, North Carolina, and the listeners in the criminal enterprise called Decatur, Illinois, and 99.9 FM, Human Rights Radio, run by Brother Lavelle. Also to those who listen at 103.3 FM, BVHP, and the criminal enterprise called Bayview Hunters Point, California, with Kaka Michael Hibbett and the crew. And at 96.3 FM, in the criminal enterprise called Santa Cruz, California, those who listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz with V-Man and their staff. Let us also shout out to the folks who listen to Berkeley Liberation Radio, run by Paul Griffin and the crew. And at this time, let me remind you, wherever you're listening, to thank those who made it possible. And also invite all of you to check us out on the Real Wide Web at www.radio.about.com. Look for the Human Rights Information Network. Click on and hear even more Human Rights Radio.
That's the co-producer for this, the Human Rights Patrol. That's Dada Kanati Kintako. And, you know, volume 33 is in the books already. There's so many things that I'd like to say, you know, about this particular one, but we'll have many other times if the creator's willing to get together and talk. But, you know, I will say this. We're going to do some programs on AIDS. Sisters and brothers, I think we will conclude, we can all conclude that if it was possible to make a germ that would skip over everybody, I mean the old and the weak, and take black folks out at their prime, there's no question this government would make it. You know what I'm saying? But the evidence is showing. A little short book, AIDS Mystery Solved by Terrence Yaxson. He's got a little pamphlet out called AIDS Mystery Solved. You need to read it. And you can defeat that whole trip if you eat right. And live like the Creator wants you to live, okay? Skip all these fools. All right, I know you probably don't want to trip on that, but I'm going to put it out there. I was one of those who said that AIDS was real. But basically what I was saying was that if it was possible, yeah, they would do it. They done already proved it. Ain't nothing they won't do. Our presence as African people 8,000 miles away from home right here, it's proof there ain't nothing they won't do. So, hey, you know, all right. We're not 4,575th night of broadcasting coming up out of the Criminal Enterprise called Springfield, Illinois at Human Rights Radio 106.5 FM. We've got the Human Rights Patrol, volume number 33. U.S. Terror, part two, the Tuskegee Massacre. Don't let them call it an experiment. It was a massacre. They sat there, and you know what? Got them shook up because a bunch of them brothers survived, man. And they said, man, what are we going to do? Leave the earth. That's about all you're going to be able to do. We're not 4,000, like we said, 575th night of broadcasting, and there is no question about it that you is listening to the people's choice, because the people choose to listen to the Human Rights Information Network.
We will remember the humanity.
We will remember the humanity.
Glory and sufferings of our ancestors.
Glory and sufferings of our ancestors.
And honor the struggle of our elders.
And honor the struggle of our elders.
We will strive to bring new values.
We will strive to bring new values.
And new life to our people.
And new life to our people.
We will have peace and harmony among us.
We will have peace and harmony among us.
We will be loving.
We will be loving.
Sharing.
Sharing.
And creative.
And creative.
We will work.
We will work.
Study.
Study.
And listen.
And listen.
So we may learn.
So we may learn.
Learn so we may teach.
Learn so we may teach.
We will cultivate self-reliance.
We will cultivate self-reliance.
We will struggle to resurrect.
And unify our homeland.
We will raise many children for our nation. We will have discipline. Patience. Devotion.
And
courage.
We will live as models.
To provide new direction for our people. We will be free and self-determining.
We are African people.
Aluta!
Continua!
Kufala!
Kufala!